Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children.
In this episode, Natalie and I are diving into some of the real challenges families face with the current education system, especially when it comes to supporting autistic children. We talk about how mainstream school isn't always inclusive and what happens when children are expected to fit into a rigid system and the emotional toll it takes when the support just isn't there. This is a personal conversation drawn from our own experiences, and sadly, we know some of you may relate.
It's getting everyone to fit into a box, and I don't think that is a model that works.
No, it's not.
In my personal view, the education system is really outdated, very outdated. They're so young when they start, and it doesn't need to be so rigid. If they could be a bit more flexible, a bit more play into the learning environment, expecting 4 and 5 year olds to sit on a chair and listen to lessons, I don't think is realistic.
There's a difference between being in school and being included in school as well. And when your child is struggling, when my son started school, he was struggling from day one. He was struggling before he arrived. There were difficulties he was having with speech, with food. They were probably the most obvious things before he started school, because I was having conversations with the teachers, or I was trying to, because I was so worried about the lack of clarity of the speech, how he would be understood and what support he would get. And we were on a long waiting list at that time for speech therapy, and we were trying to push to get some support before he started, because so many sounds were missing from his vocabulary. And I remember getting this letter from the NHS just saying, good news, he'd been allocated a batch of speech therapy with some other children. It was going to be in a group setting, and it was to work on one sound. And I remember thinking, oh my God, one sound isn't going to cut it. We're missing most sounds, more sounds than we've got. And you have those settling in sessions before school. So there were two reception teachers when my son started school. So I remember speaking to one of them. I didn't really feel that she heard me. And somebody else recommended that I emailed the other reception teacher, because she was also the school senko. And she was really good. She was very supportive and reassured me, really, that there would be support given to him when he was in school. So from that point of view, that was okay. But once my son started at school, further difficulties became apparent. I don't know if that was true for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was a bit like an explosion.
There were things that we weren't aware of that he was struggling with that were uncovered during reception. So things like a coordination, not being able to get change for PE, holding a pen. And the teachers were very good at picking that up. But there was a little group of them in my son's class that were pulled out for extra support from very early on with handwriting. I can't remember what else, to be honest, but it was this same group. Now all of those children have a diagnosis of some sort. I feel like it's perhaps obvious. I was told he'll grow out of so many of these things, particularly food. That was obviously a focus, like picky eating. It will change. It didn't change. And I don't think it changed for any of the children that were in that group. So they can certainly identify that there are issues from that young. So what can you do that's better? Because I know it's the setup. There's always going to be children in every class. There's always going to be a group. It's which group is it? So then how do you support these children best? Do you just keep your fingers crossed that they're going to grow out of it? Because the chances are that they're not, and they're going to need extra support. Or you just going to keep your fingers crossed that they go on to the next school and that's where they're completely exploded and won't be able to cope. It seems to me that the system is not fit for purpose. You've got, say, one teacher with 30 children. So obviously, no fault of the teacher, but they can't, in the way that it's set up, how can they possibly cater for all these different children's needs?
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. In teacher training, they need to include special educational needs training. It should
Yes.
be standard. They should be looking for it because we live in a world where there's a percentage of people who are neurodivergent, and we should be recognizing that. And everybody should be aware of it in the workplace. It's something that needs talking about a lot more because we need to be able to adapt our behaviors so that it's more inclusive.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't know the difference that having the right support, being in the right environment would have for these children. Both of ours, at different ages, they both had explosions, but it was around the same time, really, of not being able to cope anymore. And you just hear so many stories of other children who hold it all in until they absolutely can't anymore. But what if they were given the right support? What if they were around people who understood? If they had the training, the staff around them had the training, they might be able to think, is the classroom too much of a busy environment for them? Do they need more sensory breaks? Could they be struggling with understanding what's being said to them? My son, I realize now, he wouldn't have understood a lot of what was being said to him at that time. So that's really confusing. If you're trained, you would know that perhaps change is really hard. So, is there a way to have a visual timetable for everybody? So, everybody knows where they are when it gets to the end of term. And a lot of schools will go off timetable to do fun stuff. And for me, when I was at school, I would have been so pleased. We're just going to do fun stuff and we don't know what fun stuff looks like. But I remember coming up to school with my son one day and I was trying to clarify what's happening so that he was going to be able to cope with it. And the member of staff on the door said, "Oh, we're just going to have fun today." And the colour's just gone from his face and he can't even think how to access the classroom. That comes back to what you were saying about if all staff were trained, because they're going to have a percentage of children that they're working with who are neurodivergent. I'm sure it varies across schools, but generally, if teaching staff were aware of the things that are going to cause autistic children problems, I'm sure that there's a lot that they could work in and do naturally anyway.
Which will mean they can cope better.
Even if it's identified, say the school says to you or the parents are thinking, my child may need an assessment here at quite a young age, you're looking at such a long waiting list. And while you're waiting, so much damage can be done. And at that time, it can be very hard to access the support that you need. So if schools were set up a little bit differently, it could make a lot of difference to some children's ability to access the classroom.
I agree completely. One of the things that came up when we did the National Autistic Society course was the displays in classrooms can be quite overwhelming when you have all the stuff on the walls, and then that changes every now and again. And it's just those little things that can have such a big impact. I don't know what the answer is, but if it was just taken into consideration that maybe the majority of a classroom is kept the same on the walls, or there's a space in a main common area where they have displays, something like that, that could make a huge difference to a lot of children too.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my son's early complaints about the busyness of the walls and the change of displays. And I know that it comes from this, again, nice place. We're going to show off the children's work and we're going to make it really fun. But for some children, that just adds to that sensory overload of what's already a challenging environment for them to be in.
It's just more things that they need to process, isn't it?
And another thing that I think that we should talk about is the way that it's dealt with often when your child isn't coping. These children who get to the point where they absolutely can't cope, they're often excluded. I'm not sure
Yeah.
how many times your son was excluded.
He was suspended from school twice when he was 5 years old.
That's quite a punishment for a child who's not coping with the environment they're in, but they're treated like they're being really naughty and that their behaviour is really unacceptable.
And the expectation is that they will modify their behavior based on that punishment, when in fact, that's not going to happen to someone who is neurodivergent and is struggling in an environment. They're not going to make that connection anyway. So to me, it seems completely pointless.
Another thing that is often tried is shorter days.
That was from the beginning, pretty much. We went in later and collected earlier just to try and help him cope. But again, that has such an impact on a family. We're trying to work, we're trying to support our families, and then suddenly the day's shorter.
And it changes that routine. Whilst it's meant to help, I know very quickly for us that if something changes, that that's what we do. So if you're used to going to school 9 to 3, 8:30 to 3, whatever it is, and suddenly it's 8:30 to 12, very quickly, but that's what we do. So even if the intention is we're going to shorten the day, but then we'll work to extend it, that's very hard.
And also, what message is it giving? It's giving the message that you're different. You're
Yes.
different from everyone
Oh,
else.
yeah.
And then how does that feel to a 5, 6, 7 year old?
Yes.
It's not a great starting point. We also had where it wasn't planned that well who was going to be looking after our son at certain times. So we would arrive at school in the morning and be told, oh, you're not in this classroom today, you're going to be in this classroom with somebody else. And the horror on his face, because that's an unexpected change and it could be like that every day, so it's more to cope with. So consistency is really key.
That comes back to again what you were saying about training, understanding the impact of something that can seem such a small thing, but that may mean that child can't access school that day, or even further than that, that can start to break down their ability to access school at all. It's quite massive.
And having the phone calls in the middle of the day, he's not coping. Can you pick him up early? Like you said, they latch on to that as a new routine. So if I pick him up at lunchtime, then the next day he's going to expect to stay till lunchtime. And that makes it even harder to get them in and it's more confusing. Yeah, it's just a bad cycle.
Another thing that's a major problem is communication breakdowns between schools, local authorities, and parents. There can be a lack of transparency. Parents are often looked at first. When a child's behaviour is causing a problem, is it you? I've been asked that. We did alter things to try to see if it was me, it was the effect of me with other people bringing my child into school, but he still responded exactly the same and didn't want to go in.
Exactly the same with us. It's what's going on at home.
When you're a parent who's trying to support a child who's really struggling and then you're being looked at as the potential cause of the problem, that's really hard. We can really underestimate the emotional and mental impact that parents were already suffering with and then they're being looked at. Because you're already looking at everything if your
Yes.
child's struggling.
You're overanalyzing everything and I remember sitting down with my husband every night. Okay, what did we do wrong? How can we do this differently? It was like a daily thing. So you're already there. But then if you've got professionals also, then it makes you even more paranoid and it often isn't anything that the parents are doing.
What I didn't realise before we started all the processes was that money drives many of the decisions that are taken around your child. They're financially based. Years ago, I may have naively thought that if my child needs specialist, well, obviously the school are going to suggest specialist or the local authority is going to suggest specialist. Of course, without thinking of the cost of sending a child to specialist, and therefore, you need to be very aware that when you're fighting, there's going to be people who don't want to give your child what they need from a financial reason, not because your child doesn't need that, but you're going to get a lot of pushback because of the budgets. And they'll be told, like we were told when we had part of the EHCP needs assessment, and the educational psychologist, she saw how badly my child was struggling, that he couldn't even get into the school. She heard from the teacher how anxious he was. We even had a letter from the clinical psychologist saying, despite the adjustments that have been made, he cannot access this environment. He needs a different environment. And she still made it clear she would be recommending mainstream when he couldn't even access first school. And that really brought it home to me that it's financially based. You've got a letter from a doctor. You've got the teacher's opinion, you've got the parents' opinion, and yet you're there being paid by the council. Crack on in mainstream. good
Yeah,
luck. And
exactly.
it's not having your child's best interests at heart.
I agree with that completely. And there's a lot of fighting that has to happen to get the support that your children need. I would say trust your instincts with your child always. You know what they need. You
Yeah.
know when something's working and when it isn't. And if it isn't, then you just have to give it all you have and get them what they need.
I read a quote yesterday. If I can find it, I'll link to it in the show notes. But it said, if a child was at school anxious about going home, questions would be raised, there'd be concerns. But if a child is anxious about going from home into school, the same doesn't apply. It's really worth thinking on that.
And the pressure that's put on parents to just get them in.
To go against their instincts, to push them in at the detriment of their mental health and well-being.
And to be honest, the mental health part is a huge part of it as well. Not only is there the autism, but then you've got the mental health on top. That is just creating so many more years of heartache in therapy.
It's storing up even more problems down the line, which is why really the system needs completely revising so that our children are not forced into situations that damage them further.
We've seen it with our own children as well, that when they are in the right environment, wow, the difference.
Their mental health is so much better and they are so much more able to cope with life and to learn and to be
Just
happy,
happier.
happier, which is absolutely what we all want.
And to not worry about being different as well. And that is a massive thing that needs to be taught, is that we are all different and it's okay.
It's clear the education system needs a total rethink if we want our children to thrive, not just survive school. From training for teachers to meaningful inclusion and early intervention, there's so much work to do. But we hope that you take from this episode that your fight and the right support is valid.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.